greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. I'm Paula. The evidence for human impact on the world's climate is overwhelming. Denial is an option, but not a very smart one. Global climate change threatens our ways of living and our lives. David Orr publicly acknowledges the problems and works diligently to find or create solutions.
It's not solvable. We've already committed to a substantial warming of the planet. That cannot be undone by any known means. So what can occur is we can contain the worst of what would otherwise lie ahead. And then how do we do that? And that gets into all these kinds of changes. That gets into people understanding that you've got to vote for green candidates, not because it's a nice thing to do, it's an essential thing to do. And people who understand things like feed-in tariffs, and like energy technology and smart grid, people who've taken the trouble to understand the issues and what can be done about it. And what can be done to avoid the worst of what lies ahead is really quite substantial. So I think the only legitimate, you can't go to despair, as Gandhi said, and as we all know, that's a sin. And optimism, you just don't know enough. So hope is a sweet spot. And that's the place where we need to be. And it's mandatory on us to be hopeful. But to be hopeful means you're active. I mean, it is that verb with the sleeves rolled up. You've got to be doing things.
David Orr's seventh book is Down to the Wire, Confronting Climate Collapse. He helped launch the Green Campus movement and led the creation and construction of the first green building on a U.S. college campus, the iconic Adam Joseph Lewis Center at Oberlin College. He is distinguished professor and special assistant to its president. David Orr, we have a brand new baby in our extended family. He was born 10 days ago, and when I held this tiny little creature, thank you very much, I looked at this little Nicholas and I said, what kind of a world have we brought you into, you beautiful child? What's ahead for you? You're going to live 79 years, and I'm kind of worried about this beautiful little thing. Mm-hmm. And what kind of a world we've brought him into, and that which will be unfolding. Should I suggest to his parents that they shouldn't have done this? Do we have a way to give his parents hope rather than optimism? Where are we when we look at what we're just on the verge of doing with this tiny, beautiful creature? Grandfather?
Well, I have four. The title of the book is Down to the Wire, and I think that's exactly where we are. We're coming to the hinge point of history. So when the writer of Deuteronomy said, you know, way back when, that I put before you life and death, choose life that you and your seed may live abundantly. No generation until ours could say that or could face that choice with the finality with which we face that choice. And so when you look at the scientific dialogue about global trends and the public discourse, there's a Grand Canyon Gulf. And for us in the education world, the media world, we've got to close that Grand Canyon or build a bridge across it.
You say that so, as if we were talking about the United States. We're talking about the world, aren't we?
We are talking about the world.
And yes, the United States has a long way to go, and none of this can happen if we are not all working toward a common end of life on Earth?
That's right. And it's life on Earth that is badly divided in terms of income, badly divided in terms of the responsibility for getting us to this situation where it is down to the wire. The United States bears a disproportional responsibility, certainly in terms of carbon emissions, for climatic change that's pending in front of us. And so, it's a world issue, but we in the United States have got to act first, boldly, creatively, and we're not moving nearly fast enough.
This is an existential condition, and I don't mean purely philosophically. We're talking about the existence at least under current circumstances, according to our expectations, mm-hmm. the existence of us, but also of lots of other species. This is, right. you know, this is not optional, and yet nobody seems to want to talk about it. You've finally stepped up. I mean, you've been talking about it, but in public, saying the kinds of things that need to be said.
Well, the finally is, oh my God, stuff that isn't being Cassandra is simply saying, here it is, what you going to do?
You know, part of the reason for writing the book is that even on our side of the table, people who agree that this is an issue, the environment's important, and we've got to change lots of things, even on our side, there is a level of kind of, call it what you will, it looks like denial. It is to say that, yes, we know what the trends are, we know what the science is, but we can't tell the public. And because that would they would fall into despair, and we've got to put what Gus Speth at Yale calls happy talk out there. And so you get lots of books, 50 Ways to Save the Planet and Make a Profit, solving the climate crisis at a profit, and that's not what the science says. That is not now. It may be that we have to tell, as Socrates once is reported to have said, noble lies. But they're lies nonetheless, and most of us don't do very well on lies. And so the book is about, and I weigh this in the book, you know, I don't have any magic communication strategy, but it's to say, tell people the truth about this, and equip them to understand the truth, which is science education. But the fact is that we're at 390 parts per million CO2 right now, and if you look at what's called CO2 equivalent numbers, we're at about 430, give or take. And we're even with the economic downturn, we added 2 parts per million to the level of carbon last year.
And the number that Bill McKibben has socialized is 350 for a reason.
Well, 350 is the number, and this comes from James Hansen's work. 350 is it's the last point of safety, and above 350, and it isn't necessarily that things are safe below 350. That's the fine print of Hansen's argument. He really does say we've got to get back to 300. And so above 350, however, what we do is to set up or create a condition where these positive feedback cycles, most of them having a lot to do with methane, which is a more potent, shorter-term greenhouse gas, but a more potent greenhouse gas considerably than carbon dioxide is, molecule for molecule. And all these methane beds in permafrost and in what are called methane clathrates or hydrates in seabeds. And so if we warm the planet enough, then we trigger things that we are really not going to like, that are very sudden. And the record, the scientific record, indicates that climate can flip decade. And all of a sudden you've run the temperature up 3, 4, 5 degrees centigrade, not Fahrenheit.
That's more. We did a program about,
it was 2000.
It was 1999, the very first issue of the Atlantic Monthly for the year 2000 was with William Calvin. He wrote that cover story. Right. He called it and was simply, he's a neurobiologist.
Neurophysiologist.
But he was talking about the very clear indications coming out of the ice cores that over and over again we've had what he termed climate flip-flops.
That's right.
Let's see, you melt the all of the ice in Greenland, you stop the North Atlantic conveyor, and you've got a radically different set of problems.
Well, you know, the knowledge of the Earth as a physical system is so new. When I learned biology way back in, 1880... basically dissected frogs and things like that. But now the technology and satellites and remote reconnaissance and computers allow us to see the planet whole and to begin to think about it. But that science is very, very new. And so understanding how human forcing of climate and what it does, and it is a global issue. But what this means, and this is the problem, I think, with a lot of public perception. I started the book with a quote from David Archer, who's a geophysicist at the University of Chicago. And he said, the effects of putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere will last longer than Stonehenge, longer than time capsules, longer than nuclear waste. Susan Solomon, earlier this year in January, had a piece in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, in which she says that ocean sea levels will continue to rise for 1,000 years, even if we were to stop emitting carbon immediately. And so we've set in motion things that we're quite unaccustomed to. And so what the argument of the book is very simply that being so, that the science being what it is, it's gone past the point of being simply a technological problem, although it is partly. And it's gone past the point of being simply an economic issue, although it clearly has to do with economics. It's now an issue of governance and ethics. And governance are the how we conduct the public business. And so markets are great and economics are great. You know, we corporations need to step up, and some like Ray Anderson's interface company certainly have, and there are others. But when the bad news hits, the market isn't going to save us. You have three Katrina-scale events, let's say within the same two-month period, markets won't be there, but governments will have to be. And so this is an issue of governance. And then this is an issue of ethics in the sense that in our constitutional history, we have the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment to talk about the rights of all of us to life, liberty, and property, and maybe from the Declaration of Independence, a bit of happiness along the way. But the effects now of what one generation does can spill into the future. So what our behavior or our dereliction can cast a very long, dark shadow on the future. And this is kind of like the issue of abortion writ large. And so some of the arguments about the abortion of a fetus now apply to whole generations.
And there's so much more to be said. Let me say three things. This year happens to be the year 2009. The book of which he speaks is Down to the Wire, Confronting Climate Collapse. And it's worth noting, those fogs that we dissected when we were collectively in college, they're in big trouble.
Yeah.
We're all going to be back with David Orr in just a moment. We trust that you'll return with us.